Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Salutations, everybody. It is Maddie here today with episode 245 of the Ham Radio Podcast.
And it's me, Carrick, with ACG.
And this week, we're joined by a very special guest, Gage. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Gage Allen. I'm the creative director at a company called Player One Trailers, and we make video game trailers for all sorts of games.
Awesome. Yeah, Gage had reached out to me and kind of presented a really cool opportunity for not only myself and Carrick, but also our audience to learn about a part of the industry that we just don't talk about ever. You know, we consume trailers, but we don't know the creation process behind them. You know, I'll be honest, just so we can put this out there, as far as I was concerned, I thought trailers were made in-house by development studios, like they had hired like video editors or something along those lines. But seeing your company and the line of work you guys have, for those who don't know, I went to their site, playeronetrailers.com, and I saw there was a Nintendo Switch on TV commercial. There was Baldur's Gate 3, Stellaris, The Long Dark. So you guys have a pretty vast, recognizable portfolio. So it's going to be really exciting to talk about this, and we thank you for giving us your time and lending us your knowledge on things that I know nothing about.
Well, thank you. No, I appreciate you guys having me on the show. It's I've seen Ham Radio back when I think Lone was doing it, and
that was a while ago.
yeah, 5 years ago. So it's kind of funny to be on here and meet you guys. So.
Yeah, there we go. So let's just get right into it, right? What is the creative process for making a trailer? You know, where do you guys even begin with that? Especially if is it CGI or gameplay? Is there a different approach on that?
Yeah. So basically all trailers kind of start with what the studio wants. You know, kind of like we talk and we have this exploration process where we really try and kind of figure out what the company's looking for. And a lot of times that will vary depending on what kind of trailer it is. If it's like a CGI, like really high end E3 announcement, then the approach is very different in development and whatnot compared to like a gameplay trailer or something like that. So it really comes down to just finding out like what they're looking for, you know, what's the X factor. I always ask these studios, like, if there's one thing you want viewers to walk away from after they see this trailer or a project, like, what is that thing? And that really helps us sort of mold and get an idea of like what the process should be. Every trailer is different. But there tends to be like a predetermined path of like, you know, CGI, okay, we're talking animation, we're talking really high end stuff, we're talking months of development. You know, if we're talking a gameplay trailer, then maybe it's more of like along the lines of 6-7 weeks. But it just depends because there's 1.5 million different trailers out there. So it's kind of fun, but, that's generally where it starts.
Yeah. Cause it's funny you mentioned the timing of it all. Cause some folks have always wondered when it comes to, sometimes you'll have gameplay trailers that don't sync up with details that have come out with interviews within the last week. But now that you say, you know, they could start upwards of like 2 months beforehand. It definitely explains why. Is there and let me know if this is too on the nose, but is there like a particular cost difference? Like, let's say, you know, you're saying I'm making a gameplay trailer. Is that considerably cheaper because you're working with footage in game versus a CGI, which I'm not even sure where you would begin with that one?
Yeah. So CGI, yeah, there is a very big cost difference. Because like, if you think there's a lot of really amazing companies that do specialize in CGI trailers. You know, places like Blur or like Studio Squeeze. I mean, there's a lot of really good folks, and those, I mean, those can cost millions of dollars to make, to have like a 2-minute CGI trailer at the quality that a lot of these CGI trailers are at. Like a lot of the like Elder Scrolls Online trailers that are really highly crafted, or the Blizzard trailers, like those are super expensive to make. So when we're talking like doing gameplay trailers where, you know, we jump in and we take a 3D camera within the game and we shoot things in real time in some cinematic form, and we create title sequences and we write a voiceover and do all the editing and sound design, and we'll do custom music as well. That is definitely much cheaper. It doesn't quite reach the multi-million dollar level of some of those CGI stuff, but yeah.
So you'd say Baldur's Gate 3, that was a pretty long CGI trailer. That would rank in the higher end, we'll say, of the cost spectrum?
I would imagine. I don't know the specific details.
Gotcha.
Because that was a different studio that did the CGI opening, which is amazing.
Apologies. Yeah.
No. We specialized in the official screenshots and whatnot that came out.
Gotcha.
So that's what and we did the 8K cinematic screenshots, and then we did the 4K direct gameplay UI shots and whatnot. So we worked with Larian over the course of a few months on getting those kind of up to snuff and whatnot. So
I wonder if they had any involvement with that event you went to, Carrick.
If these guys did?
Yeah, like, you know, the gameplay and stuff that you saw, because it was all pre-recorded.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that was all just... yeah, I don't know, because that was just him playing, but he was playing the same thing he played also later when he,
when he
did
really?
The event later. Oh. Yeah, well, there were some minor differences, but, you know, it was the impromptu... I'm just going to do this was not very impromptu, because he said, I'm just going to do this three times in three different shows prior. You know, that's sort of the way it is.
Yeah.
But right. Yeah, I don't think they did on that one in particular.
Okay.
That
okay,
was
yeah.
the private press showing, yeah. right? Where he right. walked the golden path. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. No, we knew about that and whatnot. But that was everyone in the studio was like super amped to finally get the game to a point to show off like that. So, and then I think there was the PAX East showing that was live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
That one was
so that was
hairy.
The first time everyone saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, I was particularly excited, but a lot of people were like, oh my God, it's so chaotic. I'm like, welcome to Larian Games. You know,
it's kind of the charm. Yeah.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get. How do these companies, I guess, get into contact with you guys or touch base with you folks? Is it you reach out to them and say like, hey, we'd like to offer our services, or is it more like they hire you as a part of a contract maybe?
So it's a bit of both. You know, sometimes a lot. Well, most of the time for us, it's usually word of mouth. So like, you know, if Larian hires us and our work comes out this way, like we might get a recommendation to another studio that wants to work with us. It's a very weird industry in that like the general public isn't very aware that there are companies that specialize in game trailers. They think that, like you said, like a lot of it's in-house, and some studios and publishers do everything in-house. So like Rockstar, for example, Rockstar does all their stuff in-house. And they're some of the best in the world. Like I think they have some of the best trailer editors, just period. So some studios choose to go that route and really take the time to craft their own in-house team and to develop all their stuff. But there are other publishers and whatnot who choose to either just go full on with hiring dedicated companies to do so. So kind of like outsource their own team essentially. And then there's others that choose to go kind of down the line of both routes. With us, I mean, sometimes if there's a company that I really want to work with, I'll reach out and just show them and be like, hey, we do this kind of stuff. If you need something, let us know. I'd be happy to help. And other companies reach out to us and, you know, kind of work with us. And I think about 90% of the people that we work with have reached out to us. I think
cool.
That's generally how it goes. Yeah.
That's awesome. Cause I know you're creative director. So how much is that? Are you overseeing? Is that like the creative process of the trailer, or cause you said you reach out to some companies too. So how far does your work line range, I guess?
Well, so my title is creative director, but I did start the company back in 2016. And so for me, it's kind of whatever I feel like doing, like it's kind of my range. So I generally take care of the majority of the creative process for a lot of the trailers. So when it comes to like designing a trailer, writing things, getting, you know, a script going, editing, sound design, gameplay capture. But we also have our own art team and whatnot, really talented guys when we do like art cinematics, like for Stellaris, So if you've seen any Stellaris trailers, there's a chance that some of them have these like really cool 2D art cinematics in the opening or at the end. And we'll do a lot of that in-house. So it, you know, kind of just feels like it's like kind of a fun job, like a kind of like a dream job. So I get to, if I want to work with a company, I can just email them straight away instead of having like someone that we kind of designate for that do it for us specifically. But my goal is to try and get more like kind of get more into the creative process solely, because running a business and running a company, managing people and teams of people, that's fun. But it's definitely like it's a really serious job. And I think a lot of businesses will offload that. And I think the result of that is some people within the company might not realize how important that is. Like, you need to make sure your team gets paid. You need to make sure that they don't have to do crunch. Like, you need to make sure that there's all of these things that they're taking care of because they're people. And so I tend to absorb a lot of the crunch from the team so that they don't have to do it. So I try and like make sure that they can live a normal life. So that's why it's like, it's getting to a point where I'll probably need to offload some of that. So I can focus more on the creative process and I don't have to manage all so much about everything else. But at the moment it's a lot. I do a lot of stuff.
So how big's your team? If you're doing a lot of the workload, like how big is the staff you've got?
So we can go up to about 20 people. On like a few trailers. So like the recent, we did a trailer for Stellaris Federations. And I think on that we were, I think 10 or 12. So that wasn't a very big one, but I think the biggest stuff that we do is about 20, because I can't do everything. And that's the thing, right? Is like, we'll have specialists like sound designers that are just amazing, that we work with on a lot of our stuff, that do a lot of sound effects. And yeah, like I said, we'll have a really good concept art team that we put together that, you know, there's a few of us, and we'll do the art from scratch and we'll do the animation and all that kind of stuff as well. We have an animation department as well, depending on like kind of the needs of each project. So there's definitely, it's more than just me, but I do tend to do a lot of the work because we tend to have a lot of different trailers and projects.
Mm-hmm.
So,
just a warning, you know, like, you may end up hearing my dog bark. It happens every show. Oh. Yeah, it's going to happen. Like, I heard a car pull up, and I'm sitting here like, let him finish his sentence, please, dogs. So if they start barking, just putting the warning out there. By the way, Carrick, I don't want to like run the whole thing. If you've got any questions that come to mind, feel free to just shut my ass up.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what caused you to, because you said you made it, what caused you to like decide that this is going to be something you would do?
Fallout 3 was,
really?
Yes. So that was the game. Sorry if you hear, they're in my apartment building, they're vacuuming and cleaning the hallways like crazy.
I actually couldn't hear it.
I heard them just go by the door and I was like, oh God. But no, it was Fallout 3. I had been doing film work and whatnot pretty much my whole life. I think I started when I was 7. And I've been, you know, doing video stuff, and I did YouTube stuff, and Fallout 3 came out, and that was the game that made me realize, like, I could combine my video skills with my passion for games, because I love video games. And Fallout 3 is, like, my favorite game of all time. So, like, I started doing, like, machinimas and whatnot. So, like, the first machinima video I ever did was showing off my Megaton house and whatnot, because I like would very carefully piece everything together and show off armor. And so I did that, and over the years I just kind of progressed, and I think my first official trailer came out in like 2012 for this game called SCP Containment Breach, which was this indie horror game and whatnot that didn't have a trailer, so I offered to make one, and it went viral. So pretty much from then on I kind of went on the trailer route, so I think that's kind of what got me into it.
Mm. That's got to be that feeling of getting your first trailer gig, if you will. It kind of reminds me of like when I did, you have that same feeling like I personally had when I got my first review copy for a game. Like, I was kind of leaping around. I was like, yes, this is it. This is the start.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was like, it was mind blowing to see that this game that was already really popular, and to have a hand in like showing the world the hard work that the developer put into it. I think that's where it really, I think I take it very seriously, because like a lot of these studios will spend 5-6 years sometimes on these games, and they'll pour everything into them. Like, they'll work late nights, they'll like, their family will like make sacrifices so that they could be at work later. I mean, they put everything into this, and you're the guy. Like, it's down to you to make sure that the world sees their stuff and like is shown in a good light and in a way that can interest people. Because I mean, a bad trailer could sometimes make or break a game in a lot of ways, especially if it's a smaller game that doesn't have like brand recognition. So I think that first trailer showed me, I was like, wow, okay, this is a huge responsibility. Because yeah, a lot of developers are kind of counting on you to like, you know, show the world their work and the years of sacrifice that they put into it. Because a lot of developers are very proud. You know, that's the one thing I hear most. They're like, oh, we can't wait. And when a trailer comes out, like I'll get these emails and they're like, it looks great. And they're all excited. And it's cool to share in that, you know? So it shows that people make games. And I think it's always a good reminder, at least for me, to like see that firsthand.
Cool. Yeah, no, it sounds like very gratifying work. Like, you know, once you, when you get that, that email from like a studio. I get that too. I don't mean to relate my work to yours because I know yours is much more difficult than mine. But I like when I have like a company reach out and say like, hey, I like what you did today. It doesn't happen a ton, but when it does happen, it's like, oh, that felt good because you know
it's awesome.
Their work is kind of what you're representing in a manner of speaking. I get that. What's the back and forth like for you guys? Like when you're let's say you're working on a new Stellaris trailer, do you guys just go into your creative process and then dish it back and say, here's the full thing? Or do you kind of touch base every now and then? Is it sort of like the team just gets handed off and they say, make the trailer and that's it?
Yeah, so it depends, but most of the time it's very collaborative. So like with a Stellaris trailer, we'll talk about, you know, what we're going to be doing, you know, what are the, if we're showing features, kind of what's the new thing. Like with this Federations trailer that just came out that we did, the goal was like, all right, you know, Federations is coming out. Here are the features. It's mostly diplomacy focused, right? So it was all about like, how do we come up with a concept that can not only keep the viewer interested, but also can show the features of the game and kind of walk the viewer through of like, this is what this expansion has to offer. And so it'll generally start with like, we'll either talk some ideas with the studio, and I work with the marketing team pretty much over at Paradox a lot. And we'll also get input from the developers themselves. So like there's definitely like, I'll even ask the developers for help if there's like, we want to, you know, if I want to write a script around like a certain event in the game, Stellaris is huge and it would take forever to try and dig through every single event and find one that fits. There might be ones that I'll remember that I'm like, this is going to be cool, but I usually ask and see if we could get the developers to let us know what are some of the really cool stuff that they would love to have shown or might make a cool story. I wanted to Federations, I wanted to have this like in lore, you know, dialogue, like news reports and whatnot, like I did in some older trailers. But there's not really a lot of visual stuff in the new expansion. So it came down to let's let the stories of the galaxy that we'll come up with from scratch tell the story while simultaneously portraying how the player will go through the expansion. And so generally I'll give a script and we'll talk about script. I'll get feedback. We'll collaborate and figure out like what works, what doesn't. With a lot of my clients, I'm, not a yes man. So I'm very upfront. If I'm like, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think this is a good idea, but it's their trailer. So they can easily override me if they want. And the process is about finding that balance until we get to a concept that's like, let's go into production. And then we'll start developing, getting drafts and whatnot, getting a rough kind of, you know, timeline when we edit together of like pacing and music and stuff like that. And then just go back and forth, send them a draft, see what they think, you know, what should we change, you know, kind of get them on the same page of where we want to go. So they know if we're going to the wrong place, they can redirect me, you know, to something else and whatnot. And then I can redirect the team to be like, all right, let's forget this. Let's go over here. So it's very much collaborative. This is not a type of job to be like, you know, like I need to keep my idea. Like you're wrong. This is the right, like,
gotcha.
It's very much, it's their game. So we have to be very open to that kind of stuff. So
it sounds like you got to actually then be actively involved in almost playing the game, at least in the case of Stellaris. It sounds like you have to, you know, to envision that type of stuff and to take it as seriously as you do, you need to play the game. And I know that may sound silly, but we have journalists and some YouTubers who even like barely play games, and it's strange because it's their profession. So do you often log some hours into games? I know you said you love games, but sometimes you love them, but you don't got time for them.
Yeah. No, I definitely like, I will. Generally, when I start a trailer, if it's for a game I haven't played, it's going to be my first thing is I need to play the game. I need to see what you guys are trying to do, what the goal is. I need to understand it from the perspective of a player. Because if I don't play it, then the entire approach of me trying to, that's not going to work very well. Because it might be off. So I try and be as closely, like an probably the most accurate I can be to a game as possible. So I'll play through a game, and a lot of times I'll joke and say that we're kind of like our side gig. Our job that we don't talk about is we're QA testers at that point, because a lot of the games are in development when we're working on them. So a lot of times when we're trying to get through a level, we'll come across a million bugs and we'll take photos and be like, this came up here, because I'm trying to help the developers. So we play through a lot of the games. But it's definitely different than, like, if you play a game for fun, it's for fun. But the moment it's like work, it changes your approach. Like, I don't really, when I play it, it's less about like, oh, this is, you know, we'll just have fun. It's more about like, how can we tell the player the story?
Like a different
how can
lens. We show...
Exactly. Yeah. It's a different lens. So it's, you kind of switch back and forth from that quite a bit. But yeah.
Carrick, you got anything crossing that little noggin of yours?
When you were talking about playing early and stuff like that, do you guys... I mean, I'm assuming the NDAs are pretty hefty because they're like hefty with us, but
yeah, they are.
Oh, whoops. Sorry. My headphones unplugged. When you are going through all this stuff, are you basically going out and making these meetings yourself prior, that way, like people on your team don't know, you know, what you're working on at the time. So you're sort of doing the deals and then saying, okay, this deal is done, because some games probably aren't even announced, but they already need a trailer. But they don't want like 15 people at a meeting randomly from a different company knowing. So are you like,
right,
hey guys, I'll see you in a week. I got to go do something. And then coming back and being like, okay, this is what we got. Or, I mean, how do you guys handle that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I'm the one that starts, you know, because I'm probably the one with the most experience with that kind of stuff. And in terms of leading these deals and like understanding that, and we'll have code names. So we'll create separate code names that are separate from the code names that the game is being called.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that way it just reduces any kind of leaks. It's a different name and all that kind of stuff. And on top of that, yeah, we definitely, and then our NDAs will specify that like it's on a need to know basis. So not only is it, you can't have anyone that's not under NDA know anything about this thing. But in a lot of them, it's much like, you have to be able to prove that they absolutely needed to know this information at the moment that you share it with them. So that's one of those factors where you have to be very selective of like, all right, we're on this process, so now only these people need to know, and I need to prepare these people so now they'll know. But a lot of times I'll just give a code name for something, and like with voice actors, for example, a lot of the times we'll have a script, it'll be under a code name, and they won't even know the game or what it is that they're voicing for until it comes out. And then they're like, oh, nice, it was for this. And so we do that to try and, you know, because like you said, like the game might not even be announced. And, you know, we're handed this super confidential information about what it is. So we have to be very careful and very specific with security measures and whatnot. So that way companies don't have to worry. But a lot of companies want you to fly out there and make the trailer in their studios. So that way it's like on their secured networks, and ours is also secure and whatnot. So we do a lot of stuff in our own office, but, with a lot of these companies, you can just fly out and work with directly with their team and spend a couple weeks, you know, in a hotel, basically working on this stuff until you can bring it back to the main studio space. So
gotcha.
It tends to vary, but
yeah. I was going to ask that. Do you guys usually work from like your own place, or that's interesting. So you go to the development studio and just hands on. That's awesome. So you can, you don't have to like wait for emails. Like in my head this whole time, I'm thinking you're just typing out emails back and forth and you're actually right there on the scene. That's great.
Both. Yeah. It's both. A little bit of both. Yeah. Okay. So some studios will do just like you said, Skype calls and emails and stuff like that, and phone calls and getting the right kind of feedback and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then other studios, it's, we go to the studio, and whatnot. So, you know, like, like when we went to Valve, because we worked with Larry and shot a video of Sven running around in a giant metal thing of armor, and we shot it in Valve headquarters. And so like that was one where like it was really hands-on, you know, because we're right next to Seattle, and we're or next to Bellevue where Valve is. So stuff like that will be definitely right there hands-on with like live action stuff too. And yeah, there's also like, you know, I know a lot of the other trailer guys in the industry, and there's some individual freelancers who are just a single person who will fly out to companies and whatnot and just work on site as well. And so both big trailer studios and then studios like ours and then individual freelancers all do that kind of stuff. So kind of depends on what the company wants.
Interesting. As not saying I would do it, but as someone with like video editing skills, how do you crack in? Like, I know you described like the first game you got into, but how do you get companies to say like, I want Gage, who just did his first game trailer, over this company over here who's done 18, we'll say, you know, how do you get people to buy into your work? I know obviously your work is good, I've seen it, but I do wonder, you know, just sometimes companies will look at numbers and be like, we don't know who this guy is.
Right. Yeah. And like that's, and I think that's kind of it's like the free market in a way is figuring out how to, like, you know, a lot of these studios, when they find a team that they like and they trust, like that's everything, you know, it's not just the work. It's a lot of times it's about who you're talking with and how you know, whether you click. There's like different teams, there's different team dynamics, there's different personalities, like, it, you know, the right people. It's sometimes it's hard to find. And so a lot of these companies will rightfully want to stay with some of these other trailer houses or whatnot, because they want that consistent quality of work. But in terms of breaking into the industry, honestly, it all comes down legitimately, I think, to starting with a portfolio. And, you know, like I didn't go to college for this. I'm a self-taught person with this kind of stuff. So,
wow, that's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah.
There's your inspiration right there, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I think it's something like everyone could totally do, because there's so many games now that have, like, if you want to learn how to do gameplay capture, they have these photo modes, but they've also got modes where you can have a camera and move, like Fallout, for example, Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, there's you can take a free camera and adjust the like lenses and whatnot that the camera is using and capture scenes. And so the biggest thing is to constantly make stuff and add to your portfolio using those kinds of big games, because they look pretty, and like already you're going to be able to have really good quality stuff the more you practice. And the more you build that up, you can then approach like smaller indie studios, which is what I started doing, with some of this stuff that you made, and be like, hey, like, you guys need a trailer and whatnot. You might not be able to jump straight to like Bethesda right from the get-go. But you can start with these indie studios that need a trailer, need something like that, and maybe can't afford some of the bigger guys, and working with them to make official trailers. And then over time, you can build that up and have a portfolio of actual official trailers that you can show to other companies and kind of work your way up the ladder. Go to, you know, GDC, for example, great way to network and like meet people and make sure that they know that they need work. It's there. E3. I mean, there's all of these events that business meetings happen on the side all the time. And I think that combined with making sure your work is consistent, making sure, you know, you're collaborative, you understand it's a team sport. And also you really need to recognize the importance of what your job is. You can't just, you know, make it, you know, like, you don't care, whatever, I'm just going to make this thing. And like, it's sometimes it's people's livelihoods depend on what you're making. And it has to be good, and you have to take it seriously. So I think those things can help in terms of like a route to do it. But there's, I mean, there's a million other, you know, there's other trailer developers who will say that you can go to college, get a degree in film, and then move to LA, and then get an internship at a trailer agency, you know, and work your way through these companies. So there's another route that you can take as well. I took a very weird side route that not a lot of people take often, but it did work. But I think it's more of just people need to figure out what they want to try. You know, if one route doesn't work, there's a lot of others. You know, but we're in the age of the internet. You know, you can learn anything you want. You can try anything you want. There's unlimited information for that kind of stuff. And I think as long as you show a willingness to constantly improve your craft. I think that's the biggest thing you could take away from that is just constantly improving. But I mean, that's just how I learned, but there's a lot of different ways.
Right. Yeah. Carrick had brought up a number of times, Carrick, how impactful going to GDC was for you, how you, you know, got to shake some hands and stuff. And I can kind of attest to that where, you know, not to focus on the virus, you know, because I know it seems to be like what all people talk about. But one of the biggest things that stinks career-wise for myself and many others is going to stuff like PAX and, you know, E3 to a lesser extent. But, you know, PAX especially is you get to meet the faces of people working on the games and establish relationships. And those do go a very long way. And, you know, while the age of the internet is so beneficial, because you can learn everything, making those connections is really hard now, given the situation we're in. And so it's good to hear that, at least I don't want to assume too much that since you guys are able to work remotely, that maybe you weren't as heavily impacted as others may be. But, you know, I remember when you approached me, with the idea of coming on the show or collaborating, you said you felt like, I don't want to misquote you, but I think you said something along the lines of like, I feel like not enough people know about this process and what goes into it. Is there just things that come to mind that you haven't spoken of yet that you want people to hear, that you want them to learn, to know? I know we've just slammed you with a million and one questions here, so I just wanted to kind of instead just give you the floor and just be like, talk it up.
No, it's totally fine. I think when it comes to trailers, one thing that's good to keep in mind is as far as I know, I don't think trailer makers purposefully go out to make misleading trailers. I think that's a very, you hear that a lot, you know, cause like you'll see like a game will come out that feels different and looks different than like a trailer might portray. And I think a lot of, and I have to explain this a lot, but I don't think people intentionally try and do that. Like people who are responsible for making these trailers. I think what seems to happen is like with game development, things change a lot. And like you were saying, Carrick, too, like you'll start here before the game's even announced and you'll start making the trailer and 5 months might go by. And then you'll finish it, and then another 3 months until it comes out or something like that. And a lot can change within like 8 months of time between when you were showing certain features and then like they might get cut or stuff like that. And I think a lot of people don't quite understand because they don't realize that it's usually you start a trailer here, you finish it, and then that's it. But there might have been changes and whatnot that have happened during the game in the meantime that you don't really have much control over. So I think a lot more trailer creators are trying to focus more on being as accurate as possible to not just the game as it is when you get it, but also to what it might be, like what the goal is. You know, how solid are the features that we're showing here? Are they legitimate? Like, we don't want to risk misleading people because you see people are rightfully upset about that kind of stuff. If they see something and it says this is going to be that thing and then it comes out and it's not that thing, like these are paying customers. And I think a lot of trailer editors or stuff like that need to really focus on that more and understand that. And I think that's like something I've learned that like in terms of like people talking about trailers probably hasn't been brought up a lot because you don't have a lot of trailer editors that get to talk about that too much because we're so kind of behind the scenes and whatnot. But yeah, and I think, like the other thing, it's a very kind of behind the scenes job. So there is no credit. There is none of that because it's meant to support the brand and support the game. So if you guys like see, like there's a lot of really good trailer editors, like Derek is one, and there's also Gina and a bunch of big M. Joshua and Ant Farm unfortunately closed down, but the Trailer Farm and the Trailer Park. I mean, there's 100 of these trailer companies that do amazing work that I feel like more people should realize that like people specialize in this kind of stuff. And it's not hard to get into. Like, if you really want to try it, I think now with all these games that are giving these tools to players, like you can create worlds that you don't need a camera, you don't need a set, you don't need a makeup artist, you don't need a gaffer or a lighting art. You know, like you don't have to have all that here. The game can be your kind of playground. And I think that's one thing too that like might be good to know for people is that you can jump in right now at any time and make cool stuff. And I've seen some amazing machinimas that blew my mind and are way better than anything I could make, but they only have like 100 views on YouTube, and they're very, you know, they're not found because everything's so saturated. But I feel like the more people realize that like machinima is an actual type of storytelling, it's a legitimate art form, mm-hmm. you know, trailers can be as well. I feel like the more we can sort of shine recognition on these really talented folks that are up and coming that haven't really quite gotten the recognition they deserve yet. So I think shining a light on that, like if you see a machinima, like it's not just a small thing that someone put together in an hour.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people put hours and hours, days and weeks into this kind of stuff.
I can attest to that personally because, I'm sure a lot of my audience is probably familiar with Shoddycast, and they run that Storyteller series, which, you know, is just like...
They're awesome, yeah.
Yeah, they're so good. And I remember I tried... a mini series with one of my friends called the Brotherhood Archives, and we never went full on machinima, but we like went into the Gek and like tweaked some things, and like even the minor things we did, it was ridiculously hard. It was right. Just to learn it and figure it out. And so yeah, like especially when a lot of the tweaking we did, for those who are curious on some of the inside baseball, was for the terminal. We you know, because the idea was you were going through the archives that the Brotherhood had left behind, and you'd click on one, and then a trailer would essentially play, and it would be the video I made. And so we were just tweaking with the terminal and text and stuff, and some enemy placements and item spawning, which you could just do with console commands as well. But
yeah,
just that alone was hard. And when you look at what Shoddycast did with the Storyteller series, I mean, that demanded a staff, and it was really impressive. Yeah. So yeah, to just not to cut you off, but to solidify your point that yeah, making machinimas are very difficult from my hands-on experience, but also just you could tell by watching them. It's like, what, you can do that with the game?
I know. It's kind of a new thing. You know, a mm-hmm. lot of people, like games are just getting like, they're finally getting a lot of like recognition that they deserve as art, you know, and as storytelling forms. And I feel like, you know, machinimas are now kind of in that period that games were maybe 15 plus years ago, where it's like just trying to prove to the general populace that people like Shoddycast and, you know, that make these incredible miniseries or shows, and like they're people made whole movies and games like as machinimas, which is crazy. I think you're going to see a lot of these people be like the next generation of like filmmakers and storytellers, and it's just going to continue to get more advanced. Like, game trailers now, like cinematics, they're basically Pixar movies, you know, like Blizzard or the Diablo 4 trailer. I mean, like stuff like that is unbelievable, and like the amount of detail that has to go into it. And you're starting to see now these trailer companies are making their own shows. So I don't know if you guys know the Love, Death, and Robots Netflix show that they held animated episodes and whatnot on it.
Doesn't ring a bell, at least for me, Derek. Is your mic muted?
Oh, I think it is.
Apologies. So I was yelling at my dog that entire... So whenever you see me do that, it's yelling at him to shut up. I have not seen that.
Well, it's this amazing show on Netflix where all these episodes are their own individual films, and they look different art styles. They're 3D animated and whatnot. And a company that I think started that was Blur, which does a lot of like Call of Duty trailers, and they did the Destiny 2 CGI trailers, and they do a ton of these stuff, and they started doing that, and they're now doing visual effects for movies and as well as creating the show, and they brought on a bunch of other animation studios to do it. But you're seeing this like this push into like more of this machinima style filmmaking, not just from, you know, smaller creators on YouTube, but also from huge trailer agencies that like CGI type Pixar movies to push forward. So it's definitely this like growing industry that has a ton of talent. And I feel like a lot of those machinima people, like you can make a job out of this kind of stuff. You know, you could easily turn that into a trailer job if you want, or work at an animation studio for games. Like there's a lot of different outs. And I know a lot of people online, I've gotten a lot of emails from people like either in college or that are trying to turn things into a job, and they're kind of struggling about, you know, like how to do that. And I just think like some of the ways that I mentioned, you could easily get in trailer that or apply for an internship at an agency, and you can make a living off of that if you want, because there's so much great work. And I feel like some people don't give themselves the the recognition that they should get and the praise that they should get. Just because it's, you know, maybe it has 50 views on YouTube, but like, if you take that talent and put it into a company or something like that, like you could do amazing things like that, you know? So I think that was probably the reason why I wanted to start letting people know more about this world, because it's kind of a very niche style of filmmaking. And we could have some really cool, really cool storytellers, you know, kind of create their own stuff if people realize that you can do that in games. So
you mentioned, you know, misleading trailers and not intentional on the timeline once again. And I when you mentioned like cut features, I had thought immediately, had there ever been a time you were, you know, working in the trenches, making a trailer, and then a developer phones you up and goes like, hey, we removed this, you're gonna have to like redo part of the trailer or something. You've been like, oh God. And there might be like a short timetable because they planned on releasing on a certain date. Has that ever happened to you?
Of course. Yes, that has. Oh, man. I mean, it's very much,
it sounds anxiety inducing.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is a stressful job. It's very like, you know, running a studio like this. It's when I get that call, I actually really appreciate it though, because it means that the viewer is going to get a more accurate representation of the game. And so even if it means I have to go back and redo a part of the trailer, or we have to cut things out and whatnot, like I'm so used to doing that, you know, because like, you never know what might happen. Like some crisis might happen on a trailer production. We're like, oh my God, like we need to have a new voiceover. We need to do this, or something, some equipment failure happens. And you just kind of get used to like bandaging up a new solution right then. And hopefully it still works. But yeah, I do get that call. And I think more companies are starting to really pay attention to that, of like, we need to be accurate. We need to be, you know, constant. So like when I capture gameplay footage, which is usually like cinematic gameplay footage, we'll take like a camera and we'll like record in the engine, in the game, as it develops. So like Stellaris trailers, I'm basically controlling the camera in real time by hand and showing these scenes and like going by ships and just watching them fight each other and like trying to set up moments that are possible within the game. And then just using that raw footage into the edit. Other agencies will like color correct it and will like do VFX stuff, but I tend to like doing it as raw as possible with the gameplay, because then it shows the viewer like, this is what it's like, you know. And I think Fallout 4 did a brilliant job on showing that with their trailer, because they got some flack because people were like, well, it's, you know, the graphics and the mouth animations, but like that is the game. Like what they showed is exactly the game that we pretty much got.
Yeah.
And I know the video producer there, and I saw, well, Sal is gone now, but Sal made the trailer for Fallout 4 and whatnot. And I think that's just a masterclass of how to show a game in the most accurate light that you can, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's still one of my favorite trailers ever. Just, I mean, part of it's because I was so excited, and I was much younger, so I was just like off the walls about it. And I also remember like thinking, "Oh God, don't be a CGI." Not because I don't want to say I'm not a huge fan of CGI. Just nowadays, I want to see the game, right? Like I understand the purpose of them, but I just remember Fallout 4, just seeing it and be like, "This is the game," and it's like a pretty big look at the game for a first time. It was, and especially at its time period, it was definitely a lot more transparent than what I think most of us were used to, and it was for a game that a lot of people were really looking forward to. So, I mean, that type of stuff is always really nice to see. I know I asked you about CGI versus gameplay. Do you share that perspective, or as a creative, is it a little different from your angle where, I don't want to say you enjoy one over the other, but are you more along the lines of appreciating a gameplay trailer over a CGI?
Yeah, I think for me, it generally depends, because the final goal of both of those formats are different. So I think like a gameplay trailer is really cool because you get to see the game. Like I love making gameplay trailers because, you know, they're more in some ways can be more limiting, because you have whatever the game is, like that's what you have to show. And so if you're going to write a script and if you're going to show things like this or whatnot, like you're limited to what the engine's capable of. You're limited to what the graphical fidelity is. Like you're limited to the, whether it's isometric or third person or first person or whatnot, like that all changes how you approach that trailer. But it's gameplay, which is a lot of fun. And with a CGI trailer, it isn't gameplay, but you have unlimited possible. You can do anything you want. Like, it's, there is no limitations to those, unless you're trying to render them in engine, which, like, I think Battlefield does, and Death Stranding, like, they'll run in the engine in real time, but they're still like, it's all there. They can animate whatever they want. They can create whatever environment they want. They can tell whatever story they want. So I think the creative freedom that comes with CGI can allow people to see a more, I think, direct representation of what the developers envision the game to be and the story and the tone that they want. While with gameplay, it's them showing what you're seeing right in front of you. But like, you, as we both know, like, when you play a game, you might see, like if people play the original Fallout, right? And they saw that kind of isometric approach and like the turn-based stuff, and they approached it like in their mind, they're envisioning something. Like, and that's why, like, nostalgia will remember these games that maybe looked different, but we'll have these amazing memories of them that we'll, like, tell our friends for years and be like, oh my God, like in Fallout 3, when I went into the Dunwich building and then there was this and that, like, there's all these cool moments that I think, you know, like, Fallout 3 graphically, I really liked and I still like, but I feel like in my memory, when I think of Fallout 3 and some of these moments, the combat whatnot seemed way more intense and way more like realistic than if you play it now.
Yeah.
And I think that's because, you know, there's the game you're playing and then the game you're experiencing are two different things. And I can see the value of both of those. And I think a CGI trailer and a gameplay trailer can overlap in some ways in that regard. If that makes sense.
No, it definitely does. That's why I wanted to kind of pick your brain on that, because I'm, like I said, very much in the mindset of liking gameplay over CGI character. Where do you stand on that? You like gameplay
or
CGI?
I hate CGI.
You hate CGI?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I personally don't find it. I find it wasted money. Very wasted. Because it's not a really good. It's not an. I mean, that's. I don't know if you guys saw recently, but they did a trailer for the Dresden's new book. Dresden Files, which is a book about like our time, but magic users. So it's a fantasy book. But they did a TV show trailer. I was watching it just going like, it doesn't. And I get some people may like it, but for me, it doesn't translate. I want to see what it is. And a CGI doesn't translate. I also don't like CGI in games, though. Like cutscenes, I would rather see it in engine. I think it translates a little bit better. That's why Uncharted, they have incredibly high budgets, but you get something like that. However, that being said, two of my favorite things of all time are the Halo 3 diorama commercial trailer, which is to me at least the best trailer ever made. And then the second was Gears with Mad World, which was REM singing, which was incredible. Like, those two will probably forever like be entrenched in my mind as like the coolest things I've ever seen. And I think with Mad World, some of it was, you know, it was touched up. It wasn't what you actually got. You know, there was some PC footage maybe for an Xbox game, that kind of thing. But yeah, I'm just not a big fan of that. I just find it's never going to be in the game, I guess. When I see the CGI, I'm like, I don't care. We know that's not going to be what it looks like. So why do that? Versus make it look good in the game. Like Stellaris, if you're going to fly around with that to me makes far more sense, because I can go, yeah, okay. I know what I'm going to see. But if you do this big highfalutin graphical presentation of some king on some magical space throne, just like, yeah, I'll never experience that. I don't know. I just find it not distasteful, just odd.
Is there a blending that's possible? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You go ahead.
Oh, no, you're totally fine. Is there a blending? Was that your question?
Yeah, like I guess a blending of the two, like where you mix CGI and gameplay a little bit, and there's a best of both worlds. Not to settle this dispute, but rather to see if that's ever been a possibility floated by.
Yeah, I mean, Battlefield did that. I think the Battlefield 3, they did a trailer that showed. Yeah, so I think it was like live action live action and then the gameplay and stuff
and,
like that.
Yeah,
so
over the top and stuff.
Right, and they'll mix that kind of stuff. Well, they'll intercut like gameplay moments. And so I think there can be a blending for sure. And I think when it comes to CGI, I totally understand your point of view. I totally get it's not for everyone. You know, But at the same time, I also get why developers choose to put the money into that. If they were trying to show you kind of what players would experience, because I think that's in a way similar to how we approach like certain Stellaris trailers. Because, you know, a lot of the Stellaris trailers are like UI, you know, it's lists and like in your mind, you're envisioning all of this, like the galactic community, you know, it's a bunch of icons and like they're voting and stuff like that. And you'll see it in real time, like the galaxy will change and like ships are there rendered all of them together in fleets. And but like when you're seeing the voting, it's just icons and things are switching back and forth. And so what we did with that was trying to show people like this is basically what's happening is like the Senate's voting and then these guys are doing this and like and we make it really exciting and interesting and then show gameplay with that to show the repercussions of that. So I get both sides of that. And I think it's like it's one of those things. It's like it's still a subjective medium. So like you have every right to not like CGI just as much as someone else who loves CGI or loves stuff like that, too, because like I personally thought the Fallout 4 opening cinematic, you know, the one that's live action and that pans up and it's mm-hmm. the guy running and talk. I thought that was like one of the greatest opening like cinematics ever. I just thought it was so well done because it told the story and I think it set the tone and it gets you kind of ready into like what the developers are looking to have. But like when you were talking about some of the really good, like the Halo trailer and the Gears trailer, another really good one is the Dead Island one. I don't know if you've seen the Dead Island
it's the, one of the best trailers ever. Oh, the thing absolutely. Is fantastic. Yeah. And by the way, not representative of the game at all. And yeah, that's why it got dinged. It did get the shit beat out of it when the game came out. But man, that thing was good.
I know. Anton Borkel made that. And I know him. Mm. He works at Riot Games. He did amazing work on that.
Yeah.
And all the other animators, but I think that's the thing too, is like you need to really focus on, I think as a studio, like if you're making CGI, how does it represent the game? But that can be really tough because sometimes the CGI stuff comes out years before the game comes out. Yeah. And like, you might not realize there's a problem with the development approach or this scene or that, or some concept until you get to there and it's like, crap, we have to redo all of this. And then you're going to realize that the CGI isn't going to match the final product. But I think that's kind of part of the territory. It comes with the territory. You know, like Destiny was originally going to be a very kind of different game and story and all that. And they changed it up because they felt like it needed to be fixed and whatnot. And it was very different upon release. And if you go back to like the early Vidocs that Bungie released, you'll see whole storylines and features that were cut. To kind of fix what they felt like was like focusing on getting a better game. And so I think it's one of those things where like no one's perfect. You know, I think these are just people making games and lots of them, thousands of them. And if there's something that feels off or cut, you know, maybe it wasn't the right choice or maybe it was. It's hard to know unless you're like in that world. And a lot of times I won't really even know either. So I can definitely see your point of view though on that. And I think people are very expressive about games because it's such an important medium to all of us. I think games can do so much for us that not a lot of other formats can, you know, like they can immerse you in a world and they can put you in the driver's seat and make you, you know, help. I mean, games have helped people get over really horrible times in their lives and hardships and, you know, me included. And so I think people that make games, most of them, at least, I don't think they're malicious or they're trying to be wrong. But granted, like, I have a very optimistic point of view of things. So that
I'm
could just
of
be
that as well.
Oh, what was that?
I said I'm guilty of that as well.
Right. So, I mean, maybe that's what that is. But I definitely can see kind of where you're coming from with that kind of stuff for sure.
When it comes to your company, do you have like a dream project, a next big step that you want to take for your team?
I would love to work on Fallout.
Even 76?
I mean, the thing about 76, like, I haven't played it, right? So I don't know. And I think that's because I'm online looks cool, but I love the single player experience. So like Wastelanders, I think, is the one thing that might convince me to try it. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, you know, it's a different thing. Like Elder Scrolls Online, tried it. I love Guild Wars 2, so it's not like that I don't like MMOs or anything like that, but
gotcha.
I think it's just the world and tone. Like, I love the single player Bethesda story. I definitely think they can, you know, I've seen 76 get a lot of flack. I think they can turn it around, similar to how they did Elder Scrolls Online. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, you know, I only know a few of the people over there, and I know that they care a lot about what they make. But honestly, like, if they make, I want Bethesda to make a Fallout 3 remastered so bad. Like, that is something I want so bad.
Yeah.
And I was so disappointed when last year there was a rumor that mm-hmm. was coming out, and it never came out. So
mm-hmm.
if that now, ever happens.
This might be the one year we don't get like a fake rumor about it, because there aren't going to be any conventions. Like, I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, there was the E3 memo leak. I put that in quotes. Where it said that Nintendo was going to reveal Fallout 3 on the Switch. I gotta imagine if Bethesda's interested in it, it's only a matter of time, because there's been so many random games coming to Switch lately. Like, they just announced Burnout Paradise. They put like the Borderlands, XCOM, the old Baldur's Gate games, and Tides of Numenera or whatever. Like, there's just so many old games. I'm sitting here going, why not Fallout 3 or Oblivion or Morrowind? It blows my mind that they haven't printed money, essentially. So yeah, I'm with you, man. Just as much as I want them to do little feature changes, like maybe make the gunplay similar to Fallout 4, I think most people would be really okay with them just re-releasing the game and being like, here's Fallout 3 again, and that's it.
Right. I mean, that would be amazing. So, like, or New Vegas, too, because I really like New Vegas as well. I think,
same.
Yeah, I think, and it's funny, there's always that obligatory, you know, which one do you like better?
Every time. Yeah, man, I think it can get so frustrating.
Right. Well, what do you think of Outer Worlds?
I love that game so much.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. I'm surprised. I really had a feeling in my gut, because when it came out, I loved it, but I had a feeling it may be the product of, you know, the YouTube aftermath, I sometimes call it, the critiques that are, and I don't want to say they're invalidated, but like, they're these hour-long breakdowns on how the game's not as good as people think.
Yeah.
And, I understand some people can get very fiery and passionate, and they want to, you know, fully break down the game from top to bottom. And I'm sure developers can learn a lot from that input. It's just like, I just thought that the Outer Worlds would fall into that basket with like Fallout 4 of like, this isn't the RPG you thought it was. Fallout 4 made more sense. I just had this feeling in my gut that the Outer Worlds would land there, but it hasn't. And I'm pretty happy about that. I just hope they announce the DLC soon. That's what I want.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's been long enough. It's been since October. Like, my body's ready. Give me some more.
Right,
I've had my time off.
Yeah. I honestly can't wait for the DLC for that. I mean, they did talk about they were doing one. Right.
Yeah, they said, they announced it in the weirdest way. They posted on their forums, like, we are doing DLC. We'll talk about it later. And my guess is, if they're taking this long, it'll be more along the lines of an expansion rather than DLC. Because I don't think the Microsoft deal with them influenced the Outer Worlds at all, like how much cash input they had. I think it will influence the DLC, though. And maybe we'll have a situation. I don't know if you pay attention to State of Decay 2, but Carrick and I talked about how they released State of Decay 2, and then a couple of years down the line, just a few weeks ago, they released this thing called the Juggernaut Edition, which was essentially all the DLC. It like overhauled the game entirely. It was just this whole brand new experience, and it's really good. So I could totally see Obsidian just taking all that cash and doing something really drastic with it. At least that would be my expectation.
Yeah, I think Larian did that with Divinity Original Sin 2.
Yeah.
I think they went back and
they did the new voice acting. They did a bunch of stuff.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I only worked on Divinity after all of that. So I didn't get to see what it looked like before. So I feel like I part of me almost wishes I could like maybe hunt down and find the older version, and so I can like actually appreciate the new stuff they put in. Cause I loved it. I mean, I think Larian is just knocks it out of the park, honestly, with that kind of stuff.
Best RPG but developer, like, I swear.
I mean, yeah, it's they're incredible, and it's funny working with them, because they care so much. Like, you can tell, like, the way, like, when we were filming at Valve, and I was doing some of the camera stuff and on a gimbal, And watching Sven run through Valve with like everyone working behind these partitions and whatnot, and you hear the clanking of his armor, gong, 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 he's sprinting down the hall. For some reason, it's just like, that's just such a funny, like, just a way to approach, like, announcing something. You know, some studios would just be like, here's a really fancy, like, Switch trailer, but Larian's like, no, let's do this heist. Like, let's make this heist of, like, let's try and get, you know, steal Valve and whatnot. Steal their servers, I think, was the goal of the video. But, yeah, I think I really love it when companies kind of are more transparent like that and show that they're just, love games. And,
I think a lot of companies are starting to learn too, that that's a better way of approaching things, acting more human, if you will. Just relating to the person, like, we don't want to treat them like robots. We want to communicate to them, and they shouldn't treat their consumers in turn like robots, where you churn out that cute little trailer and it's like, yep, it's coming to Switch. That's it. And it's over and done with. It makes it more fun to see them lively and interactive. So yeah, I definitely agree on that. So you said Fallout was your dream project, but what's like, is there a next step for your company, or are you guys just kind of, I don't want to say coasting, that makes it sound too low effort, but are you guys just, you know, in the rhythm, I guess?
No, we're, so last year I created a Battlefield film called This Is Battlefield, and it came out and had an insane reaction from people. And I really love telling original stories within games and whatnot. And once it won a few awards, it point where, like, you know, I'm working on the sequel now. And I think Player One is, we're going to be doing trailers, but we're also working on making our own stuff, you know, our own films and shows and stuff.
Awesome.
So
very cool.
Yeah. It's going to be, I think, the skills transfer, because, you know, we love storytelling. I think everyone that's involved, no one in that works with Player One is like just doing it just cause. I think everyone is very, like, they love having a hand in telling interesting stories, from the concept artists to the sound designers and whatnot, to writers. So we're working on some interesting stuff. I don't know, maybe later in the year we'll be able to show some of it and whatnot, but I've been working on kind of, like, you know, gearing up for that process.
Cool.
So that's probably what, like, the next step would be do trailers and original content.
No, that's exciting, because now you're, you know, what would be better than to just make your own stuff when you want, right? And just to have that, it, not like it's easy, but just that ability to just rely on yourself, say, if we just do the job, and people enjoy what we make because we put our hearts into it. I mean, that's best case scenario, I think, on top of the work that you already do. Would it stretch you guys thin? Would you have to hire maybe more hands on deck?
Yeah, I would imagine. I mean, we would have to expand more to fulfill that. You know, because right now I'm pretty much the person taking care of the original stuff, and, you know, bringing the team in when we, you know, trailers and our clients are priority. We're not going to do anything that's going to mess with that, because we have a responsibility to make sure that they get all of our bandwidth that they need and stuff like that. But so we'll expand to where it doesn't affect that side of things. I mean, it's definitely, it's going to be interesting, I think, but
I'm excited to see, man, that's a really cool surprise there. I got to see the video. Is it on, like, YouTube? This Is Battlefield.
Yeah. If you look up This Is Battlefield, it's a 7-minute short film that basically is a cinematic short film where no player, everyone you see is an actual player that has no idea they're being recorded, and it has a story to it. So
that's cool.
What caused you to do that? Just a random idea, or was it something you were thinking about prior? Or what?
Yeah, well, a Battlefield has a spectate mode. And I didn't know that, you know, so I it's like people use it to, like, watch matches and stuff. And then, like, you can spectate players, but you can also take a camera and, like, adjust lenses and do all that kind of stuff. And so with some messing around, I was able to make it similar to, like, a lot of the tool sets I use in proprietary engines and Unity and Unreal, all that kind of stuff. And so I just started recording multiplayer matches and realized, I was like, oh my God, like, I can make something cool out of this. Like, I wonder if I could do an entire film with, like, a story and a voiceover and stuff like that, and do this really high quality cinematic approach. have no one know that they're being recorded. So now it's like if you played between, I think, what was it? It was November to December of 2018. You might be in the film, and there's like 20 people claiming to be this one guy. So like, it's a lot of fun because it meant to like, you're supposed to project awesome. Yourself. So yeah, that was a fun thing. And, you know, DICE was really supportive of it and EA was really supportive of it. So yeah, I got approached about a couple of award shows that wanted to put it through the ringer, and, you know, EA owns everything about it, mm-hmm. basically. Because it uses music from Battlefield, and the only thing that is not from Battlefield is the voiceover. So I just had one of our regular voice actors, and I wrote the script and did all that. But we did everything ourselves. But it uses like assets, right, from Battlefield, like their models and stuff. So I approached them and was like, you know, can I submit it to this? Like, I don't know, these guys want us to put it through, and their legal team was like, We haven't really been approached with this before. And I think a month and a half, 2 months went by, and they kept checking in. Like, it's, you know, we have to make sure precedent and stuff like that. And then out of the blue, they're like, actually, yeah, go right ahead. Submit it to as many award shows and festivals that you want.
That's cool.
I've never heard of EA doing that. It was like an astonishing like moment. Cause I'm like, holy crap. Like, that's thank you. So they were really supportive. And then it made history at a couple award shows, that have primarily for live action stuff. So it won for the first time in history. It was the first video game media to win anything at those shows. And I think it won like 3 awards, but it's enough demand happened for the sequel. So I've been working on the follow-up to that, which is taking longer cause it's bigger. But yeah, and there's,
and, I think, so 2018, not to interrupt you, but I'm trying to think what Battlefield was this in? I haven't played Battlefield in so long, so that's why I have to ask.
Yeah, so it was Battlefield 1 and Battlefield 2. So okay. it was both of those together.
Okay.
And when you watch the film, like it'll make sense why there's both of the games in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's awesome. And is it in those same Battlefields again for this sequel?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
That's right. Still, like, I'm trying to see if I'm going to add more or not, but I think it's going to be the same too.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's a really cool thing. I definitely have to check that out.
Let me know what you think.
Absolutely. I don't have any questions left though. I don't know if Carrick, you've got a laundry list that you've been trying to chop through.
I was just going to ask. So you put it together, you started doing this. If you're not, you know, at least a lot of us don't even no companies like this exist. How do you market that exactly? Like, so if somebody did want to do this, like, I don't know if you guys saw, but the God of War, Corey Balrog, the God of War guy, he posted, well, he didn't post it. The creator posted it, but he retweeted it. So a lot of people saw it, but somebody made, all the PS4 single player third person games into one trailer. So it transforms from Gears of War, or from Kratos into Spider-Man into Aloy, from, and it's seamless. Like, it's legitimately difficult to tell when they transform and how they go about it. And he posted that, and so I'm assuming that's good marketing. But if somebody wanted to get into it and did have some kind of reel, would you just suggest that they do, like, I mean, directly go to somebody's email? Do you, I mean, is there, I mean, how would somebody who's just starting out get a hold of even an indie developer? Because that's one of the issues even we have, you know, you'll email somebody, you won't get anything. Because it's a catch-all email, let's say, you know, cause it is a small indie developer. So, would you suggest they start a website and maybe post their stuff there, even though that is money? Would you see, I mean, is there any suggestions you have for somebody who's watching
who maybe wants to start? Website's number one. You definitely should have a website. Because if a company wants to work with someone and they don't have recommendations, they're going to Google it. And you're going to want to make sure that, like, your site is in that list of sites that come up for trailer makers and whatnot. Like, there's also a lot of different groups. And, like, that was the thing when I started was I joined a lot of communities when I was early on. So, like, Facebook groups, that, like, the Indie Game Developers Facebook group is great because you get to all these people post and share their in-progress games and whatnot. And it's a great way to make connections that way. There's Reddit communities as well for gaming, and like Game Developer Classifieds is one that's really great. You can post and share stuff there. You have to be, you know, you have to be proactive on that. You have to be very like, here's our stuff, here's our stuff, here's our stuff. But that's the thing, is like, you want to have a website, you want to have a reel, you want to have a way that people can very easily see who you are, what you are, you know, if you're an indie dev maker, an indie dev trailer editor, or whether you're a you know, an agency. You need to have a site, a reel, something you can post and share. You should have a presence online, you know, Twitter or Facebook, stuff like that. And then, you know, LinkedIn, and then start to make those connections as well. So, you know, cold emails, that's not a bad way to go about it. But like you said, like, you might not hear anything for a while. But when it comes to like, if an indie developer needs a trailer, like, they're going to look at Google, they're going to search it up, they're going to, if they hear recommendations. Mm-hmm. So it's all about getting started and just offering, you know, because a lot of times if you have good work and you're willing to offer a trailer to an indie developer for free, let's say, if you're not having any luck with paid stuff, like, 9 times out of 10, they might be like, you know what, sure, we could totally use a trailer and we don't have the money to pay, so that'd be great. And you can use that consistently, because like, sometimes you might get a game that will blow up and it's a huge indie game, and that's right. A huge thing to have on your site, you know, to be like, because like, that's what SCP Containment Breach was. It was already popular and it didn't have a trailer, but when the trailer came out, it blew up. It was in like the top 10 horror games PC Gamer, and like, the trailer hit 1 million views, and second trailer, and that one hit close to 1 million, and like, that's a huge thing, because then when you send emails, you can have brand recognition and game recognition. Mm-hmm. So like, you can say like, you're not, when you start, you're not going to be able to say like, oh, we first gate Nintendo this, and like, you'll have to say like, this is some of the stuff that we worked on. But the more you work on stuff, the better chances that someone that you're working with is either going to know the game that you worked on, which is going to legitimize them and you in their eyes, or they're going to look at your work and be really impressed with what you've done. So it's very important, I think, to just be constantly going after stuff. And it's not easy, you know, like, another option is being an intern at an agency if you want to play. But if you don't want to move to a whole other city and like, find someone and then hope that you can get in and all that kind of stuff, like, we're in the age of the internet, so you can still build it up on your own.
That was actually going to be my next question, and then I'm going to put this dog out real quick. But my question was actually going to be about that remote versus local work. How do you guys have your office set up? And then, do you find it easier with like, people together, or is remote, does remote work perfectly fine? I'm sorry, I'll be right back. I'm just going to put him.
Oh, that's totally fine.
Go ahead and answer that.
Okay. Yeah. So in terms of, I think remote, a lot of people do remote already. Like, a lot of editors will just work remotely from their own homes. Agencies tend to be there on site. So they'll have their own office. Like, we have our own, so we have our own dedicated VR capture space, for example. So when we need to shoot VR trailers and whatnot, we've got a room space with Vive and all that kind of stuff. And we can put up a set and a green screen and do the kind of multi-set VR trailers with it, you know, where it looks like they're in the game. We've also got our own dedicated gameplay capture stations, edit bays, you know, sound rooms, stuff like that. So we have that, but we're working from our office in a lot of ways. So when a studio is working with us, you know, a lot of times we can't work with someone in Sweden and then someone over here in the Netherlands and then someone in China. Gotcha. When we're working at all of these projects at the same time, we can't constantly fly back and forth if we're going to want to work on the titles. So we'll work from our studio most of the time. People do remote work though. So like, you know, if there's a concept artist and whatnot, that's like in England that we're working with, for example, that we're bringing on for a project, then like, yeah, they'll work from home and work in that regards. Granted, we have certain requirements when it comes to like security measures and stuff like that. You know, external firewall systems and for Wi-Fi and all that kind of stuff, that we want to make sure things are protected. But yeah, companies will also like want you to go on. So you'll go on site as well. Live action's very common for like on sites. So if you're shooting Developer Diary or anything like that.
Sorry about that.
Oh, you're totally fine.
Jesus.
I don't know if that answered the question.
Did it, Maddie, for people watching, remote versus like at home?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. My other question was going to be, because this will be asked, is let's say somebody doesn't have any money for new games. Mm-hmm. We're making shit up now, but let's say they don't. What is there any free software or any software suggestions or places to, let's say they don't even know how to, you know, it's pretty easy to, you know, understand how to put two files together, but let's say they don't. Is there any free stuff or places you would suggest for them to get information on how to edit, maybe even some best practices?
Yeah, so there's a lot of YouTube channels that specialize on how to edit. And I can send you guys a link of them because I can't remember them off the top of my head.
Yeah, sure, a guy
that he specializes in that kind of stuff. But in terms of like software, so like there's a lot of free editing software. There's like on Windows, there's Windows Movie Maker. On Mac, there's iMovie and whatnot that come with the software that you can start editing on if you want. When it comes to recording gameplay, there's like OBS. There's a bunch of free software as well. I feel like, God, there's so many too now besides those. Those were like the ones, like I started on Windows way back in like 2001 or 3 or whenever that came out.
Yeah, same.
But I know there's more stuff now. Like there are free apps of editing on your phone or on your tablet and stuff like that. But those are just a couple. When you like things like Final Cut Pro 10, for example, is I think $250 or something like that. You can go up a great one is Adobe Premiere Pro, which is for at least $20 a month.
Yeah, it's $19.99.
That's a great one that you can that's affordable, that has a full suite of stuff that you can work on. And After Effects and whatnot as well. You can get the whole Adobe suite for $50 a month, I think is what it is now. But you can get access to these tools for fairly cheap if you want to teach yourself the like industry standard level of motion graphics and editing and sound work and stuff like that. That's probably a good way to start. I would say like it's hard to say what works, mainly because it depends on what you prefer. There's no right or wrong program. Like some people like Final Cut, some like Premiere Pro, some like iCloud or iMovie. So
what do you guys use? Like if you're allowed to say this, what do you guys like internally? What are you using? What do you find like works the best for you?
Yeah. So in terms of like we use Final Cut, but I've used Premiere Pro a lot and I've used Avid and Vegas and whatnot. Because I wanted to go out and do the rounds of the program to see what works. So I originally started on Premiere Pro, on Premiere Pro with editing and whatnot. And then I moved over to Final Cut once they got like enough features that were very good. Final Cut works amazing on Mac. It's just so well integrated and it's very quick for us. But we work on both PCs and Macs and whatnot. So we'll have like 18 core editing rig systems. And then we'll have PCs for gameplay capture, and we'll do a mix of hardware work and whatnot, and external pipelines that we've built to do capture stuff. I can't really talk too much in detail about what that is, because I know that part is a little like proprietary. But yeah, in terms of editing, we use Final Cut.
So, okay.
And I know a lot of editors that just kind of do whichever they want to do. So Premiere Pro, Final Cut. I think it's worth, if you can, try the free trial and just kind of get an idea what works, but. Maddie, you said you did some editing too. I'm curious, what do you edit on?
I do Sony Vegas Pro 16.
Oh, Vegas.
Which I mean, it's nice, but man, when that thing starts crashing, it does not give up. I don't know if you've had the same issue, but when it comes to editing, I just meant my general YouTube content. I've been getting more experimental with what I spice up, whatever. But it's not like nearly on the level of trailer stuff. I just always wondered what was demanded of your process. But yeah, man, I couldn't even fathom trying to make a full on professional game trailer in Sony Vegas. Cause I tried going to After Effects. I had complained enough and I said, okay, time to put my money where my mouth is. I'm going to learn this program. And just like even splitting a clip, I just felt so confused, and I hate to admit that because it sounds so bad because I do this for a living, but I just even that I was so looking at all the different timelines, I'm like, I split it, but why is it up here and down here now? I just want to delete this one moment of like silence before I do my intro, and I couldn't do it. I was like, I'm going back to Sony Vegas. I'm just gonna there's a little bit of efficiency there.
You don't have to I don't because that program didn't work. Because like all of these programs are different for a reason. It's because they kind of are for different people that have different like approaches, different you know, pipelines and processes. Like, you know, what works for me is not going to work for someone else, and what works for them is definitely not going to work for me in a lot. So that's why it's definitely worth, I think, being like experimenting like you did. Like now you know, right?
Yeah.
Like the thing I always say is the greatest calamity of all is not to have failed, but to have failed to try, which basically means if you don't try, you'll never know.
I feel a little better now that you gave it a shot.
Yeah, no, it's great that you did that. What about you, Carrick? What kind of software do you use?
Yeah, I use Premiere. I started out with that cheap German one that was... I was trying to tell Maddie about this years ago. They do Music Maker. They're a German company. They do Music Maker, Movie Maker. They do like 55 different Maker things. And it was cheap, and it worked really well. But Premiere is just better at the rendering. The rendering, whatever they were using, it was slow, and Premiere just sort of works. And then some After Effects, but most of the stuff I do is like Maddie, where I just throw some video in and hope that what I'm talking about during the review somewhat reflects what I'm talking about at the time. And I'm like, that's good. A couple of weeks ago, I did try to get lip syncing to where I was voicing over the top of somebody as a joke. And I almost died inside. It was like, it was less than 5 seconds. And I couldn't, I even looked up online, like how the mouth creates the p sound or the p sound. So I could find this perfect cut so I could say, and do you know what I ended up doing? I panicked so much. I couldn't get it. I put Tori Black. I'm sort of risque. I put Tori Black, who's an ex-adult film star, saying, I love Carrick. Oh. You should subscribe to ACG. Cause I couldn't get it fucking right. Like no matter what I did, I used text to speech. I went online, I found a text to speech, put my fucking microphone towards my speaker and hit play, and just threw it in. I was like, that works. Premiere and what's cool about all those is, I would say most of them I can usually see it and go, okay, I get this. But I agree with Maddie. There's a couple though that I've grabbed and tried out and been like, yep, nope. The thing I don't like is that they're all going to subscription. Not all, but many go to a subscription base. And I think a lot of people just, they'd rather have a one-time purchase. And I know when I was with Adobe for a long time, I was really happy. I had my one version. Fruity Loops was the same way because I do music and Ableton. And then all of a sudden, just like TV, everything moves to a subscription. And you're like, Jesus, really? Yeah, because it doesn't take very long before, 5 years now. So I would say for three, I've been paying $20 a month. I don't even want to do the math because at some point that's going to make me mad. You know, I think that's the one thing. So I would suggest if people go out there, maybe find one, like you said, either a demo or one that's a one-time $49 purchase, $50 purchase, suck up the rendering time because they're not going to be as good and mess around with it. But
I mean, Final Cut's a one-time purchase. It's been a
Final Cut. Is it? I have a Lightroom used to be free. But a couple weeks ago, Lightroom was like considered the free mammoth editor versus Premiere, and was completely free. But I'm pretty sure I just saw that Premiere bought them, which is another thing I don't like. Which is when you get that company that comes around, and they're like, "Hey, man, we got this awesome thing," and some big company's like, "We'll buy that awesome thing for awesome money." I have no problem with them doing that, but it sort of sucks for those people who just want to get into this and mess around, and just
want to. Yeah, I do think though, like, there's a side of that which is, it might like it kind of flips, right? It's like a curve that changes because when you start in, the lower price, $20 a month, $19.99, is really easy to start off with if you don't have a lot of money to upfront the cost. Because like some programs are several hundred dollars to buy in one go. And if you want to get started sooner, you can do that. But for sure, like that's the thing is like after a certain point, like, okay, you just paid what that would have been in a one-time purchase. And now you're going to pay more. But I think the biggest thing is, does it pay for itself? I think that's the biggest way to judge how much you're paying for something is like, if you're going to spend a lot of money on something and you can, at least if you can afford to, are you going to get that money back? Is this program or hardware going to allow you to work faster or more efficiently or have more capabilities that you can charge more for and therefore earn your money back and then some? So I think that's a good way to judge it is, $20 a month on Premiere, but maybe you can. How much is that?
Yeah, if you can offset it, yeah, you're good to go.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that's a good way to judge that.
But how are you guys handling? So you're doing 4K, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
4K, yeah. So storage and shit. As somebody who uses 4K, it's people don't realize it's the most ridiculous. It's unbelievable. Like, man, I don't think anybody gets that.
Over 100 terabytes.
Yeah. So I know a lot of people, like Linus Tech Tips, which I don't watch a ton, but he was talking about his big storage stuff, that kind of thing.
Petabyte server.
Petabytes. Yeah, no shit. Oh, and by the way, anybody who's listening to us right now, listening to us right now, YouTube dropped the quality for everybody. So nobody worry about this right now. But when you're working with 4K stuff, or would you suggest new people work with 4K stuff? Actually, was going to be my question.
I think if you can, it takes a lot of space up. It depends on what compression ratios you put on the footage and whatnot. We have a state-of-the-art capture process that captures 4K pretty much lossless. So there's absolutely no quality loss. But it takes up enormous amounts of storage. And I think that's the big kind of trade-off there. So if you can capture 4K and you can have space for it or the storage, or you have if you're using a pipeline process that compresses the footage and whatnot, then great, because it future-proofs the work. Like 1080p is still popular, but like people are rapidly switching to 4K, and eventually 4K is going to be the new 1080p. And I don't know if you guys have worked on 4K or use 4K like a lot. When you are on 4K and you go back to 1080, it's vastly more noticeable that it's not as clear. And like we work in 5K, so we'll do art and stuff like that. And we'll do others in like 9 or 10K in terms of resolution, just so we have the flexibility. But we have 5K screens and whatnot. So even going to 4K now is weird because you notice that little bit of loss. And so I think like if you can do 4K, it's going to be, that project's going to last longer, and people are going to appreciate that in the future. But at the same time, like it is more pricier to go that route because you need more storage. You're going to need a computer that can handle it if you're going to be editing and doing all that kind of stuff. So if you can't handle it, 1440p is a good backup option, I think, for you guys to do. 2560 by 1440. Those are more affordable. I would definitely ask people to start there if they can. If they can't afford that, 1080 should be just fine. So for now, but just that's a good thing. It future proofs your future work if you do 4K. So
yeah, Bethesda, whenever I went to any of their events, because I bring them up because they're the only one I've ever seen have this specific capture device. When you're playing, you have the game screen, right? And then beneath it will be this device that has whatever's on screen on that. And it'll like slot in a external hard drive into the back, and it captures it in 4K, and it's insane quality. Yes, I believe that is it right there.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I've got two of them.
Ninja?
Yeah. Yeah, Ninjas. Yeah, Ninjas are probably for somebody who doesn't have a shit ton of money. You can get the 1080 Ninjas for pretty cheap, and the 4K ones aren't super bad.
Yeah,
I know the 4K ones, I hear they overheat really easily.
Yeah, I actually have a fan that is, obviously they're not going to admit it, but I do believe that that's an issue because this is the second one I've gone through. And I talked to John Linneman from Digital Foundry a lot about like what hardware they use for capturing stuff. And I was like, I want to do this. And he was like, yeah, it's good because the splitter's legless. There's no, so you can split to your monitor. You don't notice any issues, which let's be honest, if you're capturing in like OBS, you can get anywhere from, 40 to 70 to 120 millisecond lag. And so if you're trying to record a fighting game, it can be really rough if you're trying to play it. But dude, I would agree with you. Something is weird with these because I have a fan on it. Because when I don't and I touch the top, it's too much in one little case, if that makes sense. Like they needed, I'm hoping a new company comes along and is like, you know how it is, competition. Right. Somebody will come forward and be like, let's make one that, doesn't have to fit in your fucking pocket, because I think that's sort of what this is. But they're very cool.
Theirs were a little, I think, bulkier than yours.
But yeah, you can get a 9-inch. That's pretty.
I remember I went to a Dishonored 2 event and all the device terrifies me, and it's why I never invested in one, because I've gone to multiple events where they've sent me home with the capture and it just didn't work. And you're like, oh, fuck. Like, you're just like, what? Yeah, you just spent like hours playing the game.
I just got heart palpitations.
Yeah, it's a horrible, horrible feeling. And,
well, I told you I left. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and so like now I'm very much, before I leave any event, and I know someone would say this is common sense, but you kind of trust it in the technology. But yeah, since like 2017, anytime I leave an event, I'm like, can you just give me a minute? I just got to make sure this all did record properly. Because, right, you know, the companies have been cool and giving me like a little extra time to just round up what I need if I lost some gameplay. So, what were you going to say, Carrick?
I was just going to say that, when it comes to footage, that's why usually with like newcomers, if they're starting out, FLV is a little better than like MP4, because MP4, if it crashes, you're screwed. Like, that file is dead. And as somebody who's watched their PC crash, there's nothing worse than 4 hours or an hour or 4 minutes of your video, and you're like, that's screwed. FLV can crash, and it just, you know, you don't have to worry about it. But what I was going to say, I was just saying, you were talking about footage. That one time when I ended up taking the embargoed footage away from Ubisoft at that event, and they chased me down. Like, I think we all have a story of working with a big company where something crazy happens, and they were awesome about it. It wasn't even on purpose on either side, but it's like, you have these weird issues. And we also got footage one time that didn't work. It wasn't from a ninja, it was from something else. But yeah, that can definitely happen. I think anybody should double check everything. I mean, we double checked the Baldur's Gate stuff like 11 times, because they were like, we're going to give you B-roll. And it's, we got to make sure it's this and this and this, so we can use it when we need to use it. Where are we getting it? They were very cool about it. But double check, triple record, for Christ's sakes. I record twice sometimes, Shadowplay and Ninja. So sometimes I'll record Shadowplay just because I'm like, this is never broken. Shadowplay has. But just in case, because you,
right,
well, color grading will be off.
Yeah, it happened to me with DBZ Kakarot. I recorded like 4 hours of gameplay to do impressions, and it was recording through my Elgato into an external hard drive I had plugged into my computer. And when I went to my studio space, I plugged it into the computer and I double click and it's not there. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I was like it just wouldn't load in. And so now I'm just a very compulsive, like, recording chopper, I almost call it. Like, I'll keep a timer when I'm playing a game, and the second I hear it, I'm like, okay, it's an hour. Stop. Start. Yeah, I just
right. An hour, just bro. You got huge nuts.
Yeah,
man. I don't make it an hour. I don't make it. I make it like, man. No way.
Well, because here's the thing: is I hate like having, when I open up my editing software and I see like 80,000 files, I'm like, oh god, this is no.
Are you at your computer when you're doing this, or are you just hitting a button? Start.
I use Shadowplay when I'm, let's say I'm on a PC. I use Shadowplay, so it's just like, bang,
dude, do what I do. I'm telling you, save it. Make sure you have it open, the folder open, and name it to whatever you just saved. So I never open. I have like cool combo, awesome death, and they're all named. So that way, when you import it, there's no date and fucking timestamp. And you're all, I have no clue what's on this video. I was gonna say, do you know one thing that bothers me about trailers that I've been seeing on games? And I think these are in like company trailers, because it's usually indies or IGN for some reason, but their color, they're using limited or full instead of whatever they recorded at. And so for their color, so 256. And what you'll see is, go look at a lot of people's trailers. They're really blown out. Like, they're really, or they look almost gray and not rich in color. And it popped in my head, because you earlier had said some people, when they capture footage, color grade it and all that stuff. And you're like, I don't really touch things. By the way, when you're working on it, I think is fine. But what blows me away is, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but I feel like a lot of companies don't care about this shit. Because I'll go to IGN and they'll upload it'll be first 10. So they'll be like, this is the first 10 of Crew 2 or something. And it looks like it was recorded with a potato. It's the worst bit rate and the like bad color and all that kind of stuff. And I've always wondered, like, how the hell... Why would a big company, and by the way, trailers do this as well. I just watched a trailer today from a major company where all of the lighting was off, and they had obviously uploaded, a full light versus limited and stuff like that. Do you guys ever even notice that? Does that even bother you? Maybe I'm just being fickle, but that kind of stuff bothers me to no end when I'm going through trailers and I see that and all the colors are off.
Like, yeah,
Manny's looking at me like, what the fuck's he talking about?
No, I was just listening intently, believe it or not.
He's like, I have no clue.
I think, like with the IGN thing, it could be I mean, it could be that maybe someone was working on it. They might have not completely understood that process. And I think it's more of a learning process. So like making sure you're capturing the right, you know, the right bit rate and yeah. making sure that the quality is right. But like, it's a complicated, like, you know, like you guys have both seen, like, it's a complicated process. And if there's someone yeah. that's new, like, I, you know, I kind of try and give the benefit of the doubt for people. So I'm maybe someone there was a new employee or something and didn't quite nail it, or they haven't quite figured that out. Cause it's hard to, there's like 1.5 million forums out there. And the only thing that worked for me with like over the years was years of focus on like figuring out the perfect way to do things in the right setting and pipeline. But it took a while because there's like 1.5 million different hardware devices, software devices that they're all offer. They say they're the best. These guys are the best. And these people say, no, use this, no, use that. And they all have different like approaches. Like OBS is a good example. I'm trying to find the perfect balance of like what bit rate to have when you're streaming yeah. with that and whatnot. So yeah, it's hard to say, cause I don't really know. I don't know anyone that like has done that and has noticed it. And been like, oh yeah, we just don't bother with the color and whatnot. Everyone I've worked with has been very like, we need to get this right. So I think it might just be unintentional. It might just be they don't realize that it's at that level. But
I think you're I think you're a much more positive person than me, because I just think they don't give a shit. I'm sorry, they do it for every. At some point, you would think somebody would be like, dude, stuff's messed up. You need to fix this. But no, I get what you're saying. It does take a lot of time. For sure.
But it takes someone pointing it out, right? Like, I think that's a good...
That's true, too. Yeah.
Be like, hey, guys, like, this isn't looking good. Or because that could be something like someone sees that and they're like, oh, my God, maybe the format and all of that, which has happened to everyone at some point. You know, like, or the mouse cursor, which the deviled mouse cursor.
Please, let's not. Yeah, dude, I have so many reviews with a mouse cursor somewhere. It's so painful.
Yeah,
that's
like,
so funny.
I mean, yeah, but like that's yeah. So I think that's the thing is like I see your point though, and I think it's worth bringing it up, and just being like FYI, you know, this looks a little weird. Maybe you should take a look, because I think it's worth mentioning that. But yeah, I don't think people intentionally do it, honestly. But who knows?
I have these two pet peeves when I see gameplay capture, and I make sure I always adjust it for mine. And the first is like, you know, I don't know if it's the same with other editing programs, but Sony Vegas, when you drop a file in, it has it on some setting, and I always have to do this thing called disable resample, because it could be like really blurry, and then it just like instantly the
pops,
the image comes into focus essentially. And it's the strangest thing when I see people who don't disable resample, because the game looks, when you combine the compression from the video on YouTube with out disabling resample, it looks horrible. And you can even see it on my own, like, really old videos. The other is when it happens when I'm playing Switch games. It happened also when I was playing Spider-Man PS4. No matter what I do in game, there will be these black bars surrounding the screen. And when you capture it, it does capture those black bars. And so you'll watch a video and you'll see, like, someone leaving the black bars for that Switch game or that that Spider-Man PS4 game. And for me, it's not like the worst thing in the world by any stretch, but I always like pan and crop to zoom it in a little bit to eliminate those black bars, because it's
like
so out
blocks?
There. No, not even, because it's not like top and bottom. It's
so
like
what it's,
full surrounding.
What it's doing is it's capturing like at 1440, but it's a 4K frame buffer. So they're getting like a 4K frame. Sorry. So for whatever, and I've done this once or twice, admittedly. If you look, there's like a black bar around it, and sometimes you've already uploaded it, and you should set scale as or something. You know, you could in Premiere, you can do that, but they didn't. And I have seen that. The other one I noticed was we were trying to do VR footage for Half-Life, and you make people sick because they're not in the headset, and trying to put that footage online for the review. I was just like, screw it, I'm just doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, the number of people, luckily with Half-Life, people didn't care. It was Half-Life. Dude, it could have been just dog poop on a plate, and they would have been like, awesome, it's Half-Life. But any other VR game, because you're moving your head like this, and myself included, I get motion sick really easy. That shit will ruin somebody's day. And so you have to figure out that. To me, actually, I think one of the biggest caveats of VR, and one of the reasons why it doesn't capture as many people, is because it is actually very difficult to translate VR that you experience into a watchable medium The PS4 tried it because they have their 1080p out, but it crops everything and it looks really not good. But I am hoping as we move forward, that's actually one of the things, because I do believe that like it is very difficult to watch some formats on your PC. It just doesn't work. We haven't really come to a way of figuring out all of the technology to get it to work. I mean, shit, well, YouTube just added HDR 2 years ago. So what were you going to say?
I was going to say there is a method because that's a big challenge when VR came out was how do we do VR game trailer, right? Like, how do we do that in a way? Because you can do first person and but like you said, some people have that issue of it's just a little too confusing. It's, you know, it's hard to really understand what's going on. So a lot of trailers tend to keep it very still, which looks a little unnatural. Yeah. And so there's a lot of different ways you can do VR trailers that I found through like experience and probably just having fun with them and just trying to see what works. And I've done a few VR trailers. So one is just direct headset capture, like you talked about. The other is basically taking a 3D camera and capturing the model of the player in the game. So when the player is moving, some games will actually create an entire model that will follow the player, like motion capture almost.
Right.
That'll follow the player's movements. And so you can capture that aspect to see the player playing as this character and whatnot. And it's a little bit more digestible and understandable to see. The other thing is, the other option is basically using what Vive does a lot, and a few other companies, which is taking a green screen, having the person wear the VR headset and play around with it. And then basically shoot them in front of the green screen and render out the foreground elements of the VR game so that you combine everything and key out the green and put the game there, and you'll see things moving around them, live action person doing stuff. So like Beat Saber, those videos.
Yeah,
Beat Saber came out.
Because Liv does that. The program Liv on Steam allows you to use another wand as a 3D controller as well. You can get that. We did try doing the pixelation on the edges, which worked okay as well, where you basically you're literally just blurring out a little bit of the edge and making a little blurry, which seemed to work. But yeah, all those definitely work anyway. But it's just funny because it's just like it's one of the major things I want to push forward. And every time I'm like, well, Maddie finally got one, but I was always telling Maddie, I'm like, dude, blah, blah, blah. But it's like you're looking at a virtual world on a 2D screen, and I'm trying to tell you that the virtual world is better than the 2D screen, but you're digesting it via a fucking 2D screen. So it just makes it so backwards trying to show somebody good VR and be like, this is amazing. And they're all, all it looks is bad, actually. It looks like the person can't play. Everybody's shaking.
I do know that there is this new thing on YouTube. My girlfriend had shown me, and it's like a 3D vlog almost, where if it's like someone sitting there talking to the camera, you can click something on YouTube and actually like rotate while they're talking and like see the room around them. And I wonder if VR could ever have an implementation of that, where while you're recording, the player could... the viewer rather could like click their screen and like drag and kind of look around, sort of like you would in VR. You know,
You got a much cleaner room than I do, though.
That's true, right?
I don't want anybody looking around
talking. It's because I don't want you seeing over here.
Dude, yeah, no shit. Remember we talked about that? It's like my room looks fine right here, but you don't want to see the other side of this thing because it looks like a rat's nest.
I think Review Tech USA has got the best example of that. When he streams, you see like his whole fucking camera set up and shit that like is on the other side of the room, and it's so funny.
Just like who cares,
exactly,
right?
I mean, I give him props because for me it's like, you guys don't need to see that mess, but like for him, he's like, yep, that's my stream background.
There's just spider webs worth of cables and shit all piled up. It's great.
So if you hold on 1 second, these are about to die. I'm gonna switch to headset
for sure
real quick.
Gotcha. Hey man, do you have any more questions, Carrick? Or
let me look. I wrote ones when I got your Twitter. Hang on 1 second. Sorry, I'm the human malware, we'll call it that, so we don't get demonetized, is affecting our local hospital. So I'm getting emails from our local hospital right now too.
Same. Yeah.
There. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Sorry about that.
Nope, you're good.
I asked about the starting software. I didn't ask about the starting hardware, but he said some of that is proprietary, so we'll skip that.
I can talk about like what you can start with, you know.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Let's say somebody has a smaller budget. What would you suggest?
I mean, you could, depends. First, you'd probably want to pick Mac or PC. And I'd imagine if you're doing PC, might be great just because you only, so you won't have to need, because you're not going to be doing game well on Mac by like capture gameplay, because Mac isn't a fully supported platform as much as Windows is. So I'd probably suggest you get a PC. So like a laptop, there are some really cheap laptops that you can edit off. Obviously, if you're going to do 4K, getting something with a little bit more cores, so a good CPU, a good GPU, you know, stuff like that. Granted, on a laptop, you're going to be limited to the graphical facility that is the laptop's capable of outputting. So getting a custom-built PC is great. You can get those under $1,000 generally if you want to build it yourself. And then looking at the GPU level, what's a good quality range? Because developers are going to want their game to look the best, right? They're going to want to look, they want it to look great. If you're going on console, if you're going to do a console trailer, Sony and Microsoft are a little bit more picky about that stuff and don't want you showing full 4K maxed out, stuff like that on a PC. They want you to do it accurate to how it's going to look on the console. So with that, you're going to have to pick and choose and make sure it's accurate. You'll get maybe like Xbox dev kits and what like we do and whatnot, and capture directly from there or stuff like that. But getting a decent GPU for the, whatever resolution you want to capture in is probably starting point. But this might be a case of where you just might have to build up to the high fidelity graphics types of games. So, it, you know, you might not start and be able to capture Doom Eternal in 4K, 60 FPS and all that kind of stuff. You might have to start with smaller indie games and maybe invest in a better graphics card and stuff like that. Hardware is the point where it does, you have to put some money for it. You know, you can maybe rent equipment as well, which is an option for some people. If you there's a really big fidelity, graphical fidelity title that you need to capture, you can always rent a high-end workstation or high-end, you know, gameplay capture PC with a 2080 Ti and whatever you need, or a 1080 Ti, and use it for the period of that trailer and then send it back. So there are options if you need, like, graphical power now instead of later. I'm a big fan of, like, owning the stuff and like, you know, building it up and like getting the best and like not having to do that monthly payment. So, but like granted, there are options out there, but that's just a few. I, you know, it really depends on what your preference is. If Macs are good for editing and whatnot, and like artwork and stuff like that. And PCs can also do that as well because they have the Adobe Premiere set. But really with Macs, if you love, if you like working Final Cut or if you want any of the proprietary software, then using a Mac and a PC is preferable. But it, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different options out there. I hopefully that helps a little.
No, it's been plenty helpful, man.
Cool.
You've definitely given us a ton to think about. I don't want to cut you too off. Is there more questions on the list? Just I only keep asking because I am out. So whenever Carrick's done.
No, that's what I got. I got the hardware, software, and newbies, because that's usually what every time like somebody pops on, they're like, oh, you should ask starting stuff. So
yeah, gotcha. No, definitely. Cool. I think we covered all the bases. Gage, man, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, definitely.
Likewise. Yeah, thanks
I'm
for having
glad
me
you
on,
had
guys.
A good time. And, you know, thank you for teaching us. I feel like I walk away a new man today. You know, I know a lot more about the games industry because of you. So we appreciate that. I'm sure the audience does. And as always, I want to make sure you know you're more than welcome to hop back on whenever
sure.
you thank want, you. Whether, you know, it's to just talk game news or if you want to teach more people, you know, whatever works good for you, man. I just want to make sure the invitation's out there because we had a blast.
Yeah, that was fun. I appreciate you guys being so welcoming and whatnot. And
yeah, it's cool. I don't think anybody even knows half of that stuff exists. So yeah. I'm sure a lot of people right now are going, wait, what?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, just as long as we can get cooler, more people to try it out, like I think that would
yeah,
be cool to see
exactly.
stuff.
So. Nobody loses out.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, all right. Well, thanks, guys.
Of course. And we'll wrap it up here. We hope you enjoyed episode 245 of the Ham Radio Podcast. And we'll catch you guys next Sunday or Friday if you're listening to Early Access. Peace out.
Peace
Thanks,
out.
Thanks, everyone.